Be strong, but not rude. Be kind, but not weak. Be bold, but don't be a bully. Be humble, but not shy. Be confident, but not arrogant. Hello, and welcome to episode 21 of the Same Old Wombles. The Same Old Wombles podcast is brought to you by some of us who helped put together Yellow and Blue back in the day. We are non-affiliated, totally independent, and non-partisan. We're the Same Old Wombles. I'm Mark Lewis, and I'm not quite so sure anymore whether Jack Curry will be Young Player of the Year after all. Today's panel features Niall Cooper, Adam Proctor. Joining us shortly, we understand, Matt Cooper. But our special guest this evening is the AFC Wimbledon tour guide, programme contributor, and all-round good guy, the Kent Womble himself, Mr. Ray Armfield.
Good. What an intro.
Well, Ray. On tonight's show, we will have some first opinions of our new signings in the transfer window, a little review of the game against Bradford. We're going to do a little opportunity for Ray to tell us a little bit about himself and what he does at the club. And we're also going to do a little mastermind quiz for Ray. How many questions can Ray manage in 2 minutes?
All I want to do is watch football. All I want to do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to them.
That is a challenge. I've got to have to throw some extra ones in just for the hell of it, Mark. Now, you've not given me the overall stuff at the start, but definitely, because Ray Armfield is basically, in my mind, known as like Wimbledon like knowledge guru. There's like very few people that are in the same Ray Armfield class. So, you know, this is an amazing opportunity to test like guru extraordinaire. But before we go there, Mark, I really do need to know, Kent Womble, Kent, big county, where in Kent, Ray?
Yeah, well, I'm not on the mainland, but I'm not a tax exile either. I'm actually on the Isle of Sheppey.
So really not really Kent. You're basically slowly drifting off towards Essex. That's what you're saying, isn't it?
Oh, no.
I genuinely think, though, with anyone watching his social media will know that he lives in the Isle of Sheppey, because I think he spends most of his time, if it's not AFC, it's actually watching Sheppey play.
Of times a year, you know, you only ride one horse with a saddle, can't you? So yeah, now and again.
That's Delta Terms with Matthew Cooper. Good evening, Matt. How are we?
I'm okay. It's you find me now in the kitchen. It's a different experience for me. I'm having to do multitask. I'm not used to it, to be honest with you. But I'm not too bad, my friend. How are you?
I'm all right. Yeah, we're recording on a Sunday for a change, just to fit around other personal commitments, but. Welcome to everybody. Let's kick off quickly. And it's an interesting one because by Monday, when we normally record, you can have a like 48-hour opportunity to let the dust settle. And now we're like barely 24 hours after the game against Bradford. Slightly better 0-0 draw than the Crewe game. But was that to be expected? Or were we disappointed that we played 30 minutes against 10 men and still didn't manage to pull off the 3 points?
Should I start as a fountain of all football knowledge? No, I mean, I completely forgot they'd gone down to 10 men within about 30 seconds of them going down to 10 men. It didn't seem to make any difference, which is actually quite good because normally when you play, well, normally when a team plays against 10 men, it normally goes worse for them. So I was actually initially, I was like, oh, great, we're really in trouble. Yeah, it wasn't as boring as the last 0-0. I was just happy to be in person at the game because it had been so many weeks of me trying to get trains and whatever that the game didn't really do much for me. I was just like, I'm here. That's good enough. So yeah, but I mean, I like the new players. I thought the setup seemed pretty good. I don't feel like we were out of the. Yeah, I didn't feel that different. So I was pleased actually to not lose any points. I mean, I would have liked to have nicked it against 10 men. Should have done, but I don't think we had the opportunity to. So it was all right.
I've seen worse goalless draws. I thought perhaps we were almost lucky to sort of snatch a point at the end, but for that save by Zaneb, where we could have lost it. But yeah, I thought the three new lads all did fairly well. I think Pearson's quite lively, has a bit of pace, which I think we need. And I think Ali's got a bit of Lyle Taylor about him, just his style of play and his manner. I think once he gets a goal or two, you'll see a real bit of swagger in his play, hopefully. And that's what fueled Lyle, really. So my advice or not advice to the rest of League Two would be make him angry.
It was very difficult, isn't it? Because I think when you go down to 10 men, they sat deep. And in actual fact, it probably suited us better to play them against 11 in a way, because they would take more risks, and we were moving on the counter attack, and that's where we're more dangerous. I think Pearson's came in, he's done fine. I'm wondering if NYC was fit or not ill. We'll talk about that in a second. Then maybe he'd have started instead of Pearson. I think the others had only had like two or three sessions, so it was really difficult for them to get into the flow of it. So hopefully, as Ray says, you know, when they get more into the flow of it, then we'll see more about them. But there is an obvious elephant in the room, the one thing that we're missing. And it probably could have turned the game if Asal had been playing. And, you know, this is going to be the big contentious thing. I was saying on Saturday, what would have been really nice if he'd have put something up on his now defunct social media, just saying, wishing the lads all the best. Sorry, I can't be there. You know, hope to be back in the blue shirt soon. Something like that would have been really good. If there had been something from him, you know, either directly through his social media or through the club. But it's just, you know, it's really difficult for us not to.
Yeah, I mean, like Matt, normally I kind of get you kind of get a sniff about what's going on. And with the whole Asal thing, it's just been, you know, really unusual. And, you know, I think that what the club are saying about him being ill is probably what they're being told. But I think it feels like you've got an agent who's telling Asal to be ill and to not risk getting injured, because this agent is probably thinking there's a really good chance I can get him a big move. I'll get a nice slice of the cut. So you just kind of phone up being sick for a few weeks while I try and get a deal sorted. And I just think that's, you know, really upsetting. But I just kind of feel that feels like, from all the rumours going around, is the one that's got the most truth.
That is the problem, isn't it? It's rumour on your end.
They're telling us all they can tell us. But I think you might have a player that's been informed to say, be ill. And that's, I'd be like in a kind of situation where you kind of lose the love for a sound because he's basically pissing us about a bit. But I think he could be his agent. I don't know, that's how.
This is a question I was actually going to ask later on, but you might as well throw it in here. There was a piece in the programme, which I know that Ray contributes to, and it's always a good read. There you go, absolutely. Yeah. As sold by some random people around the ground now and again, including my good self. But there was a piece in the programme about the players that have just reached 100 appearances for the club. So Paul Cannon-Bayer has recently done it, Chislett's done it, Woodyard's done it as well. And then they, of course, added in that Asal has made 97 appearances, which is great. But the genuine, honest truth, which I think we could throw around here, the group of us on the pod tonight, do we genuinely think that he'll end up making appearance number 100 in a Wimbledon shirt?
Darling, you've got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
No, if I'm being honest. I had a quick look at his agent on social media, and there were four guys who worked for the company that represents him. I'd heard of none of them, and as well as being football agents, they also do wealth management. So that kind of makes me think what's in his best interests. So but let's wait and see. But all the vibes I get are negative ones now. And can I see him even turning out for us again? I don't think so. As of right now, maybe not. No,
I probably agree. I don't think there's going to be 100 appearances. I mean, I don't. As everyone knows, I don't really look at Twitter, but because obviously that we have our own Twitter handle for the podcast occasionally, and Mark sends really useful links that are Twitter related. I'm sort of diving in there. And yeah, and I saw obviously the change to his social media account where there's no pictures anymore. And just seeing that, that's a really odd thing to do, because clearly the pictures previously had him in a Wimbledon shirt. So yeah, changing your profile picture is I think apparently it's recommended to change your profile picture every 3 years if you want to be like hip and cool. But to change it to have nothing seems really, really odd. And yeah, I get the sense the agent... it feels to me like the agent's telling him what to do, and the agent is saying be sick, and the club are telling us what they know, which is fair enough. And I don't think the club's hiding anything. Actually, I know some people were like, oh, you know, is the club saying one thing and something else is going on? I don't think the club is, but again, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, yeah, I guess he's worried about injury, if you're going to do a transfer, but he's still under contract, so surely, I mean, I guess JJ's got to go and find some more out and not just take him at his word. But I suppose you have to take people at their word these days. I don't know. It just seems odd.
On the pod last week, we talked about the issues that you obviously have when you've got loanee players in and how things change. And you know, fundamentally, here in the pod and Jackson himself and anyone around the club, they want to talk about the players that we've got. You know, and we've been talking about Tala for a couple of weeks, which is understandable because he made a good impression with us. But he's gone. And he went to Portsmouth, and he was on the bench for Portsmouth yesterday, and they lost 3-0 at Bolton. Unfortunately, we're going to move on. So if yesterday was the first game of the post-Towler, post-Magoma, post-Hudlin, post-Assal era, so to speak, I thought we did okay. I mean, I think Pearson, as Ray says, Pearson has some genuine pace. We don't have genuine pace in our team. He's a right winger. He's not a left winger. And I'd like to see them switched. I'd like to see... if we can get Chislett coming off the left and having a go at goal, and Pearson actually taking on some fullbacks, because he certainly had the licking of the Bradford fullback. I mean, the most interesting question I got out of yesterday's game is, Bradford have been in the playoffs there or thereabouts all season. If that's a playoff contending team, yes, we did almost lose it at the end because we gave them the chance to have that shot, which Nick made a good save from. But if that's the best a playoff contender's got to offer, then does that mean we still got a chance? Or am I delusional?
I think we still got a chance, Mark. Yeah, you are always delusional. But I think you've got... Mark, I think we have a chance, totally. But, you know... I have to pick you up on this thing. At the moment, we are post-Magoma, post-Towler and post-Hudlin. We don't know if we're post-Assal. And I genuinely feel that if he'd have been on yesterday, we could have got those points. He does things which are just different. And there are things that we know. We know he's got a clause in his contract for $1 million, all right? And if it happens like that, that's a decent whack for an E2 player. $1 million, hopefully with some... That's a great thing. If he's ill, then... Surely the club is assessing him as well. Surely that we've got our own medical staff that are meeting him and making sure that is true. Because if it's not true, he's then in breach of contract and we don't, you know, and as a result, he doesn't get paid. And I know we're desperate to move on, and we will in a sec, but it is just really frustrating that we just don't know. So we are caught in a bit of a limbo, and it's just frustrating. And I wish there was some clarity on it. And just saying he's ill, it just is not giving us the clarity we want. But as for yesterday, we did okay. I mean, I just expect that we're missing something.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think the one thing that if you're looking at Assal would be with $1 million clause, then what actually could happen is we could actually be in a situation where there's multiple clubs going in for him. So I mean, what I've heard about is the Bolton rejected offer. And I know that Bolton have been sniffing around because I've got friends that are Bolton fans and know the kind of Bolton. And that's, while that's been denied, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. But, like, you know, I think we could be in a situation there could be several clubs. And if there are several clubs bidding for him, then, you know, we might be looking at a price quite significantly north of $1 million. But, you know, what do we do to fill that gap in? Because the Sal's a special talent. And he's, you know, it's that person you've got who... Like Matt was saying, on Saturday, you need a player that kind of beats a man and brings other people in, creates space. That's what you needed, because that's what you do against 10 men. Because normally, like we were talking about, we're a team that does counter-attacking football. As a counter-attacking football team, that's fine when you've got players, teams pushing onto you. But we haven't, you know, Bradford are a team that were with 10 men, they're going to sit back, and we're not good at breaking down difficult organised defences. That's the bit that Sal offers.
Just to say, I think it's worth bearing in mind, we're still only halfway through the transfer window, and I think the second half is only going to get more frantic, isn't it? So there could be clubs waiting to make a late move for him. But it still gives us the issue, what do we do with him in the meantime? I think there probably are multiple, but let's not be naive here. Let's say we do sell him for the £1 million buyout that we apparently have on him. We're not going to spend £1 million replacing him, are we? Some of that money's got to go elsewhere. And also, January is never a good time to look either, is it? Because there's lots of clubs either trying to go up, trying to stay up. And from our view, yes, we're what, four points off the playoffs, but so is half the division, really. So, you know, let's be sensible there as well. We're not suddenly going to turn into Gillingham and start chucking money around. And in fact, any players that want to come to a team with money like Gillingham are going to maybe hoover up.
Yeah, fair point. Unfortunate point as well. Obviously, the Gillingham are after loads of players. They've taken Hawkins from Mansfield. They've taken George Lapsey from Mansfield, or I think he was ex-Charlton. So again, players coming from the north back down to the south. They've obviously also taken Tom Nichols as well from Crawley, who seemed to be intent on pressing the self-destruct button. But actually, when we had Danny, and I appreciate that Danny also isn't responsible for player transfers, but we had him on the pod a month or so ago. And one of the little pleas I said to him, just as a fan, was, please, can we not wait until 11:59 on the last day of the transfer window to sign someone? And we have signed Ali Alhamadi. We have signed Armani Little, which is possibly the best-named footballer I've come across. Obviously, we've signed Sam Pearson as well. And we've got Robinson back, who clearly has some issues with his hamstring, so he's not 100% fit yet. But that's at least three more players than you normally signed by the 15th of the transfer window. Ray makes a very good issue, very, very good point. And I thought, again, a brief little cameo, but I thought Armani looked like a type of midfield player we don't have. Comfortable on the ball, comfortable to spray the ball left and right. Excellent set pieces. Possibly even arguably better than Chislett's. Although I'm sure Chislett's not going to be taking off free kicks if he can put the ones in like he did yesterday. So whenever you add to a squad or put different players into a squad, they've got to be different and offer you something you don't have already. I think the Lyle Taylor reference that Ray made is fascinating and probably quite accurate. And I think, you know, after he was rugby tackled down to the ground the first time he ever got the ball, and he immediately went to the referee, not sort of trying to be dissenting, but basically saying, look, I was well clear the guy should have been sent off, and the referee had politely explained why he only booked him. I like that kind of play. He's going to get, and I think he did already, get fans off their seats, which is going to be positive, which means that both home and away, he's going to get a positive reaction from the fans. And fingers crossed, to somewhere like Newport next week, who are on a bit of a bad run since we played them, then he could get an opportunity to open his account. Okay. What do you reckon, Adam? You at the game. What were your impressions of the new players yesterday?
No, I liked him. I liked him. I mean, I liked him all a lot. One of the things that I was like, what I couldn't work out is like, what's going on with Pearson's socks or whatever? Why has he got these tiny socks? And I think from the photo when I zoomed in, he did have tiny shin pads. What's that all about? I thought that was like against the rules. You couldn't have like, was that? I thought there was, you have to have a specific sort of kit.
When I looked at it, first of all, I thought he's got no shin pads on at all. And suddenly, when you zoom in on a tiny picture of him, it's like having an Oyster card strapped to his leg or something. I thought, what's that going to do? And I did actually send him a picture of my own leg, because when I played in a schools game 45 years ago, I had my leg cut open when I wasn't wearing shin pads, and I've still got a lovely scar after my 10 stitches in there. And I thought, don't end up like me. But I mean, League Two is a tough old league, and if you start suddenly doing some tricks and showing a bit of flair, and a bit of leg, if you see what I mean, somebody's going to go biting it, surely.
I mean, I have to say the thing that I find very disturbing, Adam and Ray, is your, you know, close-up pictures of people's calves. But, you know, it's each to their own, I say. Who am I to judge?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you've got Pell doing that weird thing with his socks as well, where he's like cuts them at the back. That like that seemed to spring up in Qatar for a load of England players. I don't know what that's about. He's obviously got amazing calves or something. So yeah, I mean, it's clearly is now my new thing, looking at people's calves.
Someone somewhere is now, as we speak, preparing an image of Sam Pearson's calves against Jack Grealish's calves, and because he likes rolling his socks down as well, doesn't he? As random as that is.
One or two cut the feet off their socks now as well. That seems to be some sort of fashion statement also. I've never got that.
On Twitter, I literally have to see this bit where you've got somebody who's cutting holes in their socks, and apparently it makes a big difference and improves your performance. I have no idea how that works, but like, I literally, little holes, just randomly up the leg. So clearly, obviously us, with our fantastic knowledge of football, don't quite... have that like insight, that kind of scientific insight, and that's clearly where it's going. So Adam, I suspect that the micro shin pad and the holes in the socks could be the way forward, and maybe Ray, the 14 stitches in your leg are what's needed to make footballers the expert thing. So Ray, perhaps your football career could still happen, it could still be there. You could be, in fact, Ray, the future of sound. That's what we've been missing out. That's where it is. That's what I think the future is. Ray Arnfield, we need to get him signed up ASAP and replace the sound. We probably won't, admittedly, Ray, pay £1 million for you, but, you know, could be the future.
My career never went above Sunday league level, so I'm the last person to be signed up for anything. But I'm still a sort of don't wear gloves and wear black boots kind of guy. So I'm a dinosaur these days.
But yeah, lovable dinosaur. And actually, that's a good note to be able to...
You'll fit right in, especially with Adam. It's a big thing for him, you know. You'll fit in.
Only black boots for Adam. Absolutely. Okay, I'm going to move this shambolic conversation on, and actually just bring it back to talking about Ray and letting Ray talk about himself, in fact, because Ray is involved with a number of different women projects and has been involved with a number of different women projects over the years. The silent auction that's happened for a number of times, raising very valuable funds to the club. But you tell us, Ray, obviously in your dotage now, in your retired situation, then as a womble of a certain vintage, as they say, possibly even a year or two earlier than some of us that watched us at Plough Lane in the late 70s, what involvement do you have with the club nowadays, and how do you sort of keep your hand in at Plough Lane?
I wasn't sure whether you said toilet or twilight there, but let's go with twilight.
Twilight.
what hats do I wear now? I suppose the main one is still the one that I've done for 20 years and been a contributor to the matchday programme. And just the last couple of years, I've started to be one of what's now 5 stadium tour guides. Something I can do. We run them twice a week. 2 tours on a Friday, 1 on a match day, which seems to be very, very popular as well. Kind of access all areas sort of tour, and I chuck in a bit of history as well. We end up with a visit to the museum. But we always try and tailor tours as to who's on them, because some people want to have a look around. Some people want to hear a few sort of stories. So we try and make sure that people get what they want, and hopefully leave knowing something that they didn't know prior to starting the tour. I think the silent auctions have probably run their course now as we've moved down to Plough Lane, but I've still got plenty to keep me busy. And like one or two of you guys, I'm currently working in the background on the Hall of Fame project that's going to come out fairly soon.
Hall of Fame project's awesome, Ray. I'm loving the prospect of that. I've got to ask, before we go into the Hall of Fame project, which we've definitely got to touch on, you mentioned stories, right? So you're walking around, there've got to be 2 or 3 stories that just people love. And what are they, Ray? What are the kind of stories that kind of, I'm going to ruin your whole tour, you'll get no bookings from now on, but what are the kind of best stories you've got when you're going around and people go, wow, I didn't know that?
I think the main one is when I sort of chuck in towards the start, I try and line people up fairly close to... the other side of the stadium where the power station is the other side of the fence. And I do say that we actually played on a pitch that straddled that and our own stadium footprint in the 1911-12 season. So when people do moan about, oh, you chucked out the Greyhound and stock car people, they've been there since 1928. Well, I say, well, technically, we have moved home to Plough Lane, but not the old ground that you think down the road, but actually back to where we are now, because we were here first. And quite a few of our fans don't even realise that. I've also got three levels of crazy gang stories, depending on, well, one, if there's any children on the tour, and the other two, what I think they might like. So usually people get one of those off me as well.
So here's an interesting question, just to interject briefly. Talking about crazy gang stories, Wally was at the game yesterday and they were singing Wally's at the Wheel in the crowd. And I've seen the Twitter feed. I didn't get into the ground immediately to be able to see him actually coming out. I gather he was well received, and obviously it's a positive thing he was there, and loads of us remember him as a player and so on. Obviously he left under a bit of a cloud. Has that been kind of forgotten about, or am I just being sort of rude to bring it up again? Or is he now just the folk hero he always was?
I think he's gone back to being more of a folk hero status. I mean, I'm aware, talking to ex-DTB members, not Niall, that he was nervous about coming along yesterday. He was nervous about the reception that he was going to get. But we have to remember that, you know, aside from here, you know, yes, the time as a manager, arguably our most successful result in recent times has been under him. The 4-2 beating of West Ham, that was under his stewardship. But he was a player for us for a long period of time, and was a cult hero, you know. So I think that thing about it is, if you're once a Don, always a Don, and we do like to keep hold of these people. I don't think he's necessarily forgotten what happened, but he still does have that sort of cult status.
And thanks, Matt. And also, to be fair, likewise with Glenn Hodges as well. Glenn Hodges was the manager at a difficult time in COVID with no one in the stadium. And he was able to see the stadium yesterday. And he did a good interview. Again, big up to Chris Thorpe. He was on the pod with us a few weeks ago. He's done some really good interviews with ex-players, ex-managers recently. One with Glenn Hodges, one with Jake Reeves a couple of weeks back as well, which is a positive thing. And well worth reading. And it's good to hear that these ex-employees still hold the club in, you know, fond esteem, which is positive overall. Sorry, Ray, I interjected there. I was curious, because we talk about it all the time in terms of how we think the season's gone. You've obviously got a year or two as experience as a Wimbledon fan. What would your reflections be on how the season's gone, how we've established ourselves or adjusted ourselves to being in League Two?
Well, I think it's actually quite a refreshing change for this year so far. Not to look down, because I'm still in the mindset of thinking, how have the bottom two, how have the bottom four got on every week? And I still do it, even though we're like, 17, 18 points above them. It's just that mindset, because we've had, 11 and a half years out of 12 of doing this, really, as a football league club, apart from that glorious six-month period when we made the playoffs and went up. Now we're sort of positioned in the middle of the table. It feels kind of weird, because you know that the playoffs are reachable, but there is hopefully enough of a gap not to worry about the wrong end of the table, because it's kind of a good league to sort of be in, because four go up and two go down. So unless you're one of those two, it's not a bad league to be in, really. I mean, I hate to use the C word, consolidation, in case you're worried. But it wouldn't hurt maybe this year. I mean, I'd love to have a go up the playoffs, and I'd love to go up, obviously. Everybody would. But it wouldn't be the end of the world if we didn't, as long as I think we had a decent year and, say, aim for the top 10, which is realistic.
And again, I don't think anyone wants to necessarily shoo our friend Asal out the door. But were he to leave in January, and I suspect we'd get more money for him if we did sell him this month, and we then managed to not necessarily make that playoff push, but at least establish ourselves post ASAL as a solid League Two team, pushing forward with a mixture and sprinkling of youth players coming through, academy players coming through, and also your some of your interesting attacking loanees, like someone like Sam Pearson from Bristol City. That seems positive to me. And looking up rather than looking down is definitely always positive. Always definitely a good view in that, area in that particular point of view.
I'd like to think also we're a reasonable prospect for a player to have a look at. I mean, I know that geography-wise, we're in a expensive area, so we're not going to get family men from the north coming down because it's not financially possible for us or for them. But I think if we sort of push ourselves as a soundly run, sensible club, decent gates, a new stadium, players will know they'll get paid at the end of the month, which there's one or two teams in several leagues that you can't guarantee that. And I like to think that players who leave us sort of go to other clubs or talk to other players and say, well, do you know what? If, you know, my teammate wants to go there, it's not a bad club. And I think there probably have been one or two instances at other clubs where players have talked and maybe that we've got a player or a signing as a result of that.
Yeah, and it would appear now maybe with Bristol City there's a relationship going. We obviously know there's a relationship going with Brentford, and the more Brentford forge ahead in the Premier League, coming through their B team, because they don't have an academy team, coming through the B team are going to be some interesting prospects that need to get out and play men's football. And if we can be a kind of, so to speak, part of their conveyor belt, then, you know, that's a positive thing overall, I think.
Yeah. Okay. What we also need to be is sort of a Brentford B for teams lower than us. I think we need a go-to team, we hoover up some of the better talents, say, in the conference in the Southeast, because there are clubs there as well. And I'd like to think perhaps younger pros who've maybe left a bigger club and thought, well, that's it, I'm not going to have a league career, suddenly look at us, see a bit of a pathway there and think, well, yeah, that's my stepping stone back in. And if I do well, I'll be noticed, like Asal, like Rodoni, like Matt Cox even. I think we are a bit of a shop window, so we should use that for bringing players in as well as...
I think so. I think it feels like we've almost gone back to being what this whole season, we're now back to being the old style of Wimbledon. The old style of Wimbledon, both in terms of our play, you know, we are quick on the attack. We can get stuck in a bit, which is nice. Because at the start of the season, we were very slow break getting out, but now we're quite quick. And the other thing in terms of behind the scenes is that we are now at that point where we can bring the young players in, bring our academy players in. You've got to say that people like, you know, Huss and Jack, Curry have done brilliantly for us. So to be able to have that and then to find these sort of like, you know, diamonds in the coal, I think that's what we've always been about. And if we can start to do that and bring people forwards, you know, and you know, at the moment we're a selling club. If we can get to a point, we want to be a selling club. If we can get to a point where people like Asal is going for over a million, then that's a great model for us to have. Oh.
It's barely 2 years ago since Asal made his debut and slid in and got a little tap in at Shrewsbury away on a Tuesday night, and no one had ever heard of him. And apparently Robinson couldn't even give him a loan in non-league because they thought he was too small and too insignificant. So, yeah, you're right. Things come particularly quickly. And obviously now with Huss as right back and Jack Curry left back, that they are wonderful, excellent prospects. But talking about old school Wimbledon, this is why I'm going to bring us back to our friend, Mr. Ray. So I've got a little mastermind 2 minute question thing for Ray. So I need Adam to with a stopwatch or something to count 2 minutes. And I need Matt just to not mark down how many yeses he gets right. Because obviously I've got the answers in front of me.
I'm actually sat in a black chair as well, would you believe? So.
Look at that. You sat in a black chair. So.
And with a light.
Feel free to give me the bleep, bleep, bleep thing so I can do a side to side finish, you know. just a little bit of fun. But these are questions which are all about Wimbledon and AFC Wimbledon, because obviously all of us have covered and seen the Dons in that time, and so has Ray. So it's roughly, I don't know, 1977 onwards. For me to know the answers anyway, otherwise I'd be looking up in record books. Niall's obviously going to try and test himself at the same time. Nobody else share all the answers. And obviously, if we get through all the questions, then Niall can throw out some more that he may know himself. Okay, are you ready to start the timer, Mr. Adam?
Yep.
All right, so I'm just going to shout out some questions, Ryan. Obviously, you give us the answer and we'll move on. And if you don't know, then just say pass. But I'm sure you'll get all of these 100% bang on. So, okay, are we ready?
Yep.
Who was the youngest ever, who still is, the youngest ever Wimbledon League player?
Oh, 17, pass. No.
Kevin Gage. Yep. Who was the oldest ever Wimbledon player?
Dave Donaldson.
Correct. What do Jeff Bryant and Jamie Stewart have in common?
They're both centre halves. England Youth Internationals.
They both scored the first goal in our games in the league.
Mark, if he doesn't get it, can I have a go?
Yeah.
All right. Name three players to play for Wimbledon FC and AFC Wimbledon. Any three players.
Jason Newell, Neil Sullivan. What's the other one? Ooh, brain's gone. There's one more, isn't there? There's one more.
Centre-back. Played centre-back for us, but first originally played as a winger.
Oh, Marcus Gale. God.
Correct. You could have had Gavin Bolger, Jermaine Darlington, Roger Joseph, Mickey Roots, or Kevin Tilley. When Jermaine Darlington signed for Wimbledon, his previous club was?
Watford.
Cardiff City, hence the three-point deduction.
Yeah.
Who signed for Wimbledon for £15,000 in October 1986 from Wealdstone?
Was it as much as that? No, it wasn't.
I thought it was 10,000.
Yeah, it was less than that, wasn't it?
Okay, who was it?
Still a bargain, obviously.
Forget the money, who was it?
Was it Vinnie Jones?
It was Vinnie Jones, correct. Who was Wimbledon's first ever professional international player?
Are we talking full international?
No.
Full international, not full international.
Under 21 international.
All right.
England under 21.
Yes.
Was he player of the year 3 years in a row in the mid-80s?
Oh, yeah, all right. Yeah, who wins? That's 2 minutes. Look at that. How many did he get?
2 minutes. Yeah.
I got some more. Do you want to carry on and do some more? I got some more.
Yeah,
I do. Mikey T, he's good at this.
I'll tell you what, everyone can go on and I'll do the questions, and then whoever just shouts out the answer first gets the question.
Well, I'll just disconnect right now.
Adam, you must know some of these.
You'll know some of these.
I just say, though, that according to my calculations, Ray got 5.
Well done,
Ray. That does include 3 of the past players in one question. So I've added those together to,
Harsh. Okay. Well, I'll carry on. You can just shout the answers out. Whoever jumps in. Who missed the penalty in the player final against Luton?
I know him.
Mohammed.
He played brilliant. Yes.
Yes, Khaled Mohammed. Thank you, Ray. Well done. In the 2013-2014 season, the club were docked 3 points for fielding an ineligible player. Who was?
Drake Nicholson.
Correct. Who did the Dons beat for the first time ever on the 7th of October 2014?
It's not Scum, is it?
Yes, it is. Correct. Who was Wimbledon manager longer, Joe Kinnear or Dave Bassett?
Joe Kinnear.
Yeah, Kinnear.
Joe Kinnear, January 92 to June 99. Dave Bassett, January 81 to June 87. Which one's the odd one out and why? George Frankham, Harry Pell, Jake Reeves, Curtis Asano.
We already established Pell cuts his socks in a weird way, so maybe that's it.
Nothing to do with that.
Pell,
Frankham, Pell, Reeves, and Curtis Asano.
A whole bunch of them ex-Palace.
Nothing to do with that.
Is Pell the only one who's come back to us. He's played for us twice, played for AFC Wimbledon twice.
That's kind of the answer. The answer is three of them came on loan and then came back permanently. And those three are George Frankham, Harry Pearl, and Jake Reeves. Osano just came on loan. How many league goals did Danny Kemble score for Wimbledon?
That's ridiculous.
No, it's not.
Really?
Think about it.
No.
How many football league goals
did Danny Kemble score for us?
None.
Correct. Because he never played for us in the football league. What was the crowd at Sandhurst for the first ever game against Sandhurst in the CCL?
2,200 and something.
2,449. How many goals did Kevin Cooper ever score for us? Kevin Cooper the second?
107.
104, apparently. What was the footballer Mike Berry's claim to fame?
Mike Berry.
Part of a famous Berry group. He hung out with lots of berries.
He was right.
Scored the winner for Chipstead in the game, our first ever home game, home league game that we lost in the CCL. The son of which ex-Wimbledon player had an unsuccessful trial for us pre-season this season?
Dennis
Wye is correct, Ray. Well done. Who's made the second most AFC Wimbledon appearances? Barry Fuller having made the most.
Sam Hassel.
Already been mentioned so far in this quiz.
Second most. Oh, I thought it's Sam Hatton. It's not Sam Hatton.
No.
Frankham.
George Frankham, correct. Who in season 2003-2004 was our first ever young player of the year?
Bolger.
Gavin Bolger, correct. And the final one. Who scored for Leicester to deprive Wimbledon of a Football League semi-final win in season 1996-97.
That's not Savage, is it?
I thought it was Savage. It's not Savage, no.
Steve Walsh?
No. In that team, though, that had Savage and Walsh in it.
Muzzy, is it?
Was it?
Go through the midfield, we'll get there eventually.
I don't know.
Mark Lewis, is this called Same Old Leicester?
It's just one question about Leicester, all right? We were all horrified by this.
I don't care. Do you think I'm like, you know, you're going to ask me quizzes about ex-opposing players? It's not where I'm at. Ask me instead, like, who was in the 1982-83 Fourth Division Championship team? Fine. Well up for that. Ask me who played for, like, Bradford yesterday, on Saturday, right? Don't really care.
This is what I have to part with every week, right? The answer, Simon Grayson, so there.
This is what we have to put up with every week, Ray.
Sunday's become a quiz about same old other team. This, he wants to change every week. He wants to change the name of the pod. The next week we'll be playing same old, I don't know, Palace or something like that.
And at this point, I will add in that somebody on social media commented that last week's episode was the best episode yet, and there was one person who's a regular member of the panel that wasn't on last week's episode. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, that is low blow right there. That is a low blow. The thing I want to know is like how that was. Yeah, there was. So I want to ask Ray a question as well, but also I want to just check with Mark. Like, how many questions did you think you could get through in 2 minutes? My word, that's a lot of questions.
So just a random blast from the past. When ITV Digital, I messaged Ray about this the other day. I was in a quiz team that represented Wimbledon when ITV Digital was on for 1 year before they went bust. And they ferried us up to Granada Studios and we did TV stuff. And Mikey T, who now does the, who did Radio WGN, now does the commentary for the games. He was on the team. And it was a mastermind type thing, 2 minutes. In 2 minutes, he answered 16 questions correctly. They actually ran out of questions. He got all 16 of them right. And the question about Kevin Gage is one that was actually asked to me in the final that we were in. And I managed to get it right somehow. Just randomly came from nowhere.
Oh, brilliant. Wow. There you go. I wonder if it's on, I guess if it's ITV, it won't be on YouTube or anywhere.
I don't think it's on YouTube. No, I think we tried to look it up.
But. So, Ray, I was going to ask you a question, because obviously you do the tours and you meet lots of people who are really interested in Wimbledon. And you obviously get to talk to them and see different facets of our kind of fan base. I mean, is there anything that you think from those meetings that you'd like to see the club sort of do over the next year that you think would really capture the kind of people that are coming for the tours, the kind of things you're seeing around the stadium that you think would be just, you know, an extra thing or something that the club should sort of look at? Because I'd be interested to hear.
What we're trying to do now is add former players into tours when we can. I know some come down for the sort of big match day anyway, but just to come down for the tours, it's a bit difficult. And I do appreciate that when I do most of my tours on Fridays, they are working days. But if I can just give it a quick plug, next Friday, I've got Chris Gell coming down on my tour. I've had Andy Sullivan going back further, Tony White on tours. And I find the non-league guys will move heaven and earth to sort of come on a tour because they're just so pleased to be asked along, which is quite nice, really, because they probably assume that we're just after the big names. But we're not. I mean, I've had people come on the tour just to see Andy Sullivan. And he's shocked about that.
And I love Sully, right? I mean, I was, you know, that's exactly the sort of thing. Because that first season with Sully, I mean, that's luckily in those days, there weren't many people that like were looking at us on YouTube because Sully had that one trick with his little kind of flick that he must have done every single game. But I loved it. I loved it. And, you know, for me, that sort of stuff, well, like you said, Christian, I'm like instantly thinking that game, get all the shot away and the song, you know, Gel Toyos part. I mean, like, he doesn't realise how much of a legend he is amongst, you know, the kind of people who've grown up with AFC Wimbledon. I mean, like, and I love that. I think that's absolutely brilliant. I think embracing our history is exactly what the club's about. I think it's fantastic. I'm really glad that we're doing these tours, Ray, and I think it's brilliant. So keep it up, mate. Definitely pro it.
This is it. Just go. I mean, when we had the dinners at a previous ground, we had the Batsford boys down, the Southern League team of the 70s that I grew up with. And my mate and I unashamedly went around getting all their autographs, and they had like grown-up children with them. And they were just sat there open mouth, you know, like, why do you want my dad's autograph? He was a postman in Watford. I thought, well, he is now. But I mean, back in the day, he was a god. And players of that ilk still don't understand quite how like revered they are. And I think that the same probably will happen for some of the non-league teams that we have. I know the squad or the team that won Conference South still have a WhatsApp group and keep in touch. So I think when we start doing dinners at the club, I would love to get them back as well as one or two others, maybe the Conference playoff final winning squad or team as well, because I think some of those guys don't quite realise how much we sort of like them.
Oh, 100%. If we manage to get the CCL boys back with like the likes of Oakins and Bolger and Gareth Graham and Joe Sheeran and whatever, then that could be quite messy. We'd have to refill the bar taps quite quickly.
That's a complete liability waiting to happen. I'd love to see them all. But
I'm just going to tell one very, very quick story similar to Ray's, actually. I managed to get to the Alan Batsford dinner years ago, which was organised by Steve Elson and a number of guys over the David Lloyd. And John Leslie was there, who's my hero. And I was literally completely and utterly speechless when he was there. I went to talk to him and I was sat in front of him and I couldn't say a word because he was my boyhood hero from the age of 7. Anyway, moving us swiftly along to wrap us up for the night, we're going to finish up with some numbers. Matt's had to head off, so we will finish up with some numbers quickly. This is a really simple way. I give you a number, just a simple number. The number relates to something that's happened about Wimbledon or this season. It's always about this season. So we'll start off with a relatively straightforward one for Niall. And Niall's number is 1,157.
Oh, yeah. He's left. He's left in protest at the numbers game. Niall's internet must have died.
He's left the protest. Excellent. Always good. Oh, we'll just do the two for you, Tolan, then. Ray knows the answer. What's the answer, Ray?
Was that the number of Bradford fans at the game?
It was the number of Bradford fans yesterday. Yeah, second only to Sutton, who bought 1,200. Massive, wonderful attendance from them, really. Okay. Adam's number is number 6.
And Mark's got a list of these things. He's looking for the easiest one, basically. And I'm still not going to get it right. 6.
This relates to transfer window and new players and so on.
Oh, what, 3 and 3 out? That's 6? I don't... Did we pay £6 to someone for something? I don't know.
We're cheap, but not that cheap.
I don't know, Mark. 6. The only 6 I've got in my head is that was the Manchester United Women's Super League today. That was their score. But no, so I don't know, Mark.
It was 6-0, yes. So with the number of new players we brought in and obviously loanees we've lost and so on, there were only 6 players started the game yesterday that started the first game of the season out of the starting 11. Nick Zanoff, Jack Curry, Pierce at the back, George Marsh in midfield with Chislett and Josh Davidson up front. Yeah. 5 new players, which, and again, that's going to give some indication of exactly how we've had to mix and match overall. So, gentlemen, you've been fabulous. We've been the same old Wombles. That's episode 21. A massive, massive thanks to our special guest, Ray Armfield. And thanks to young Matthew Cooper and young Niall Cooper, who've disappeared off to have some dinner, I think. And obviously thanks to Adam as well. We are the same old Wombles. We're up for you on Spotify and Twitter Spaces and anywhere else you can find us online. And obviously the blogs that we have on the same old Wombles website as well. And episode will be out every Tuesday morning, usually. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week. Good night.